Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister is good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb or one of the curly energy savers if you're just really environmentally conscious and love mercury that much. And my very special guest is Janet Clare, coming at us from an undisclosed South American location. Janet, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for using my middle name. It's people rarely do. It's actually Janet Clare Phelan, which is what most of my articles appear under, Janet Phelan.
My bad.
But I have my Skype under Janet Clare. It mitigates a little bit of the spam coming in via Skype. You know how that goes. So, it is a beautiful sunny day here in Chiapas. It's the rainy season, which means that it's usually sunny in the morning and then just rains like nobody's business all afternoon and evening long. But we have a little break going right now, and it's actually the afternoon and it's sunny.
Wow, isn't that lovely?
Well, it is for us. You know, we get fairly wet here. So, but I love it. I'm not complaining. I love it.
Righto. Now, speaking of other things you love, the subject of bioweapons. This is what we're here to talk about today. It's quite a serious topic, of course.
Well, so. it certainly is. And with all the attention that 9/11 has been given, and the subsequent stripping of our rights, the massive surveillance monster that we're now all living under, you know, I think that not quite enough attention has been given to the anthrax attacks, which happened right after, the week after 9/11, and there's a thread going on concerning these anthrax attacks and what happened as a result.
Hold on. Are we talking about the same anthrax attacks that were all traced back to U.S. bioweapons research labs like in Fort Detrick and whatnot?
Well, that's a good question, whether it traces back there or not. The FBI certainly wants us to believe, once again, the lone nut theory that Dr. Bruce Ivins simply went off his rocker and did this all alone. But the evidence does not support that.
Is that called a crazy Ivan?
Well, now, unfortunately, a dead Ivan, you know, and there's also the issue about his quote-unquote suicide, but, you know, how convenient that the target, you know, conveniently expired you know, right before he could even ever have his day in court or his, you know, his own testimony heard.
And yeah, so, why is it? What is
closed.
It about?
Case closed. Yeah, sorry.
What is it about going up against the government in court that makes people want to kill themselves en masse? I don't get it. I mean, well, actually, I kind of do get it because, you know, imagine facing them government stooges in court, you know. It's like, I think death is preferable. No, I don't think so. He got suicided.
Well, there are interesting details having to do with Bruce Ivan's quote-unquote suicide. For example, he allegedly overdosed on Tylenol, but the police report doesn't have any Tylenol packages or anything found in his house. So did he teleport it in? I mean, how did he get that into his house if there's no containers, number one? There's also a very disturbing detail having to do, apparently, he began to rally in the hospital. And when it became obvious that he was rallying and might very well survive this, he was pulled off life support, thereby ensuring his demise. So, yeah. You know, we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem here.
Maybe he crushed up some of the bathroom floor and used that as Tylenol.
You know, the problem is, Vinny, that we're living in a holographic, media-enabled delusion. So, that you know, the media will trot itself out and, you know, well, the government says this, so this is the way it is, you know, and pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. So it is very heartening that more and more people are peeking behind that curtain. And I believe that these anthrax attacks of September 2001 point directly towards another event on a, you know, possibly significant scale. And I think, you know, I'm not here to fearmonger. I'm here, hopefully, to give people some information that may, you know, eventually help protect them.
Are you sure you don't want to fearmonger just a little bit? You know, I mean, and here's the other thing that I was wondering about fearmongering. If you're telling the truth, and it's really, really scary and makes people afraid, is that fearmongering or is that just telling the truth? Because I think fearmongering is just when you're making stuff up in order to make people afraid.
Well, fearmongering is another one of those phrases like conspiracy theory. It has been put together to kind of taint, you know, the person who might be actually pointing behind the curtain or saying the emperor has no clothes. So these are terms that are used to sort of, I think, kind of besmirch people who are actually, number one, getting on to what's really going on and then, you know, trying to warn other people. Personally, I'll tell you, I think there's only one thing to be afraid of, and this is my own perspective, and that's doing the wrong thing. You know, I think that we all have, you know, whether we look at ourselves as, you know, whether we affiliate religiously, whether we just simply know that we have a conscience, that we're all somehow connected and we're all in this together, you know, no matter how you look at it, I think that that betrayal and putting oneself and one's own selfish interests above, you know, the interests of your neighbor is not a good thing. And I think that this is what we really have to be afraid of. Oh, there I am. There I am up on your screen.
Yeah. Well, I've gotten a suggestion from one of my listeners that during the broadcast, the thing that they really hate most is watching my frickin' bobbing head the whole time. You know, and that I should put the guest up on the gargantuan screen behind me. So, you know, I'm just trialing it out. I put up Suzanne Posel's one up on the screen behind me the other day, and it was like this giant, all-seeing Suzanne Posel, you know, like Sauron behind me, and it kind of freaked a few of the listeners out.
The all-seeing eye of Suzanne Posel?
The all-seeing Posel. It was classic. Okay, well, anyway, we're getting off topic, aren't we? Speaking of fear-mongering, and I wanted to bring in the New Zealand perspective on this just briefly. The Prime Minister, John Key, right, former Federal Reserve banker, I'm sure you know, he comes out the other day amidst huge, huge opposition to his new GCSB bill, which is basically Patriot Act on steroids, whatever. And he says, you know what, we really need this bill, after everybody says that they don't want it, after this poll's on TV, 80% of respondents saying we don't want it. We really need this new GCSB bill. Well, why is that, John? Because there's Al-Qaeda in New Zealand. Yeah, that's what's going on. Really? Which ones? And you're like, oh, I can't reveal that information. Have you got any evidence of your allegation? No, I can't reveal that information. Have you got any possible suspect? No, I can't reveal that information. Are there any names, dates, places, numbers, any freaking thing that you can point to assure us that you're not just a lying piece of trash who's fear-mongering in order to get your draconian BS pass? No, sorry, you're just going to have to trust me based upon the thousands of lies that I've already told per day as the Prime Minister of this country. Just trust me this time. Because at this time I'm telling the truth. I swear I am.
This is so sad. Trust me. I think those are two of the most alarming words when they come out of the mouth of a politician. Trust me.
And the other alarming words are, we're from the government and we're here to help you.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they announced that in Boston when they invaded the streets with freaking armored troop carriers to get two guys who were surrendering.
Yeah.
You can't make this stuff up, but it's actually quite sad, isn't it?
Well, you know, I have this little phrase I'm sort of tossing around in my head. Remember how during, well, you were too young, but during the Vietnam War, there was the slogan, what if they gave a war and nobody came? Well, you know, as a United States citizen who will no longer wants to live in her country, I'm trying this one out. What if they gave a country and everybody left?
So. Well, people are leaving the United States like rats leaving a sinking ship at the moment. It's reminiscent of what happened in the Third Reich towards the beginning of World War II. They had like virtually a mass exodus of Germans who didn't want to live in a tyranny, who didn't want to have all their freedoms taken off them. And nowadays, it's the United States being the one to experience this. And it's really quite sad, you know. I mean, I've not lived in the United States. I'm not an American. But even so, I see the idea of what America should have been, and I see it besmirched by a bunch of scumbaggery agents of the New World Order, and it's just really sick because there's so many freaking good people in that country.
Well, the times they are changing, Vinny. Times they are changing.
For the worse or the better. I think that actually things are getting better and worse at the same time, Janet, you know what I mean?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. There are more and more people who are, you know, who are popping up and doing the kinds of things that you're doing, you know, and really using that bullhorn to kind of let people know, you know, that things, Houston, we have a problem. So, you know, in that respect, I think things are certainly looking up. And along with this, we have more and more oppression going on, unfortunately, worldwide. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So,
bioweapons is the topic. We're getting off topic here.
Well, you know, it's all of a cloth. It's all part of the fabric of the world in which we're living now. So it's all, you know, really deserving of discussion. So bioweapons.
I think that dealing with it with humor is the fabric softener.
Ah, right. Well, what is it they say? If you weren't laughing, you'd be crying. So, well, I think that dealing with it with humor is, you know, is a way it's another way, basically, to basically express concerns. And there are many ways to express concerns, and I like your way.
Yeah, I was with one of my listeners, Vincent, incidentally, yesterday. It was like V1 and V2, you know? Are you thinking what I'm thinking, V1? Shoot, I hope not V2. And he was asking me, you know, why don't you cover things like a little bit more seriously, Vinny? And I was just going, okay, can you name me one other show that deals with these issues with comedy? No? Okay, can you name me one other show that deals with these issues really seriously and doesn't let up about it? He says, well, all of them. I say, exactly. So when you tell me to cover these things more seriously, what you're telling me is, Vinny, why can't you be like everybody else?
No.
Those are very tainted words. I mean, anybody who has any level of self-respect and hears that being said about them, why don't you just be like everybody else, you know? Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I explained to him what the point of the show is. The point of the show isn't to necessarily wake people up per se, okay? The people who listen to the show are already awake. The point of fact is, this information is infuriating and it can drive you insane. It literally can. There are a lot of people who get driven literally insane from hearing this kind of information day in, day out, with no reprieve, with no let up. My objective is to keep those people who are already awake sane so that they don't slip into some kind of insane stupor, okay? That's the whole thing. I'm just here to relieve the tension. The information, just an added extra.
Ah, Vinny's was antidote to the rubber room.
Lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts.
That is true.
Okay. Bioweapons. In fact, we've only got like 30 seconds until the end of this segment, Janet. So how about you give us a quick teaser and then we're going to go to break and then we'll come back and we'll launch right into it like a cruise missile.
Right. Bioweapons. You want me to give you a 30-second teaser and you're giving me no time whatsoever to think over what to say.
It's now a 15-second teaser.
I don't appreciate that, Vinny. No, we're going
it's
to
It's now a 10-second teaser.
When you get back from break, you will hear the most shocking, pornographic, lascivious, lewd. Does that work?
Yeah. Lascivious and lewd with Janet Phelan. We'll be right back. Wait, who is it? A lewd Phelan. That's what we're talking about. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere, and don't you go friggin' nuts.
Please don't desert me. Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky.
Welcome back. Black sunrise. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Janet Phelan. And do you have a website there, Janet?
Yes, I do. It's janetphelan.com.
All right. And you were the inspiration article. Your inspiration mm-hmm. behind the song, Oh, What a Feeling. Da, 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 da. Okay.
You know, when I was in junior high, I'd walk into geometry class and they go, here's the girl who's Phelan, you know. So you can make all kinds of jokes with my name. I don't mind.
You're getting used to it after a while, eh? The problem is nobody knows how to make jokes about the name Vinny Eastwood. You know, like maybe this. I mean, the common one is like, "Oh, are you related to Clint Eastwood?" Which isn't really a joke. Nobody can really come up with a joke based on this name. It's ironic because I can make jokes out of pretty much anything. All right, I'm sorry. Let's get back to the issue at hand. The right. Lewd Phelan. We're talking about bioweapons.
Lewd, lascivious, and pornographic bioweapons. We can forget about the adjectives and just focus on the bioweapons for the time being. So bioweapons have been specifically allegations of the United States violations of biological weapons laws have been back in the news lately. A couple of months ago, a colonel in China accused the United States of deliberately planting a bioweapon in his country, which resulted in that H7N9 avian flu epidemic, which killed over 35 people. Actually, very scary mortality rate with this strain. Over 30% of the people who are infected with it apparently die. This colonel, highly placed colonel in the Chinese army, made quite a bit of flurry in the news because he accused the U.S. of doing this to his country. And then just last week, there was an accusation that came from a highly placed minister in Russia saying that the U.S. was basically conspiring with Georgia in terms of this bioweapons lab that the U.S. and Georgia has sort of cooked up right across the border from Russia. And actually just, I believe yesterday, there was some movement on this issue where the U.S. is now signing off of its partnership with Georgia with this lab, saying, no, we're not going to do anything to you. See, we're going away now. So this issue is beginning to engage nations now and their own, national security concerns about the behavior of the United States. But my concerns, my specific concerns about the United States and its biological weapons agenda points to a very possible engineering of a pandemic, which would, whether or not it will affect China and Russia is a question mark, but would certainly affect people residing within the borders of the United States. And that is a concern that has been, there are indicators that this concern is valid. So if we start with the anthrax attacks of 2001 and sort of start tracing the thread from there onward, we find some rather alarming indicators. As a result of the anthrax attacks, the U.S. Launched a huge bio, quote-unquote, biodefense program. Since September of 2001, the United States government has pumped over $70 billion into this, quote-unquote, biodefense program. Now, the reason I keep saying quote-unquote is for a number of reasons. First of all, biodefense is, as any college-level science student would know, is really a blade that cuts both ways, because in order to develop a countermeasure, a treatment for a biological weapon, you've got to have the biological weapon, okay? So every statement about biodefense implicit within this, in the background, is the existence of that weapon that they are allegedly testing the countermeasure against. Now, interestingly enough, since the anthrax mailings of 2001, with all this $70 billion pumped into biodefense, we have yet to develop a second-generation anthrax vaccine. The first anthrax vaccine is reputed to have caused Gulf War syndrome. So $70 billion later, we can't come up with a second-generation vaccine. That in itself raises some questions.
Well, personally, if they don't come up with a vaccine, I think that's a victory. Because vaccines are very evil indeed. And as far as I know, have no benefit or safety or effectiveness.
There's a lot of problems associated with vaccines. Right. So one has to ask, well, what are you doing with that $70 billion, huh? Well, what the U.S. is doing, among other things, is that they're funding all these what they call biosecurity labs. The BSLs, biosecurity labs, biosafety labs, they are graded from like level 1 to level 4, with the most, shall we say, radioactive labs being at the higher end of the numerical spectrum. For example, level 4 labs are where they're dealing with substances where there's no known cure. So if there's a leak or, if there's something happens, then you can't do anything about it. So the containment security measures at these level four labs are supposed to be the most extreme. Level three labs,
they have like self-destruct and fire purge protocols and things like that in those kind of labs, don't they?
Well, they're supposed to have all kinds of protocols, but you know, if you start looking at the number of quote unquote accidents and leaks, I mean, it's very scary because there's all kinds of leaks going on in labs.
What was her name? Jane Burgermeister indeed reported a this thing. I think there's something like 56 different checks that that go out with a vaccine out of a level four lab, and one of these labs produced the swine flu vaccine a number of years ago, and I think it might have been in the Czech Republic that they tested it on. Stoats or weasels or something, and they all died. And they found out that it was purposely contaminated. Okay, so 56 security checks, and they all simultaneously failed? I don't freaking think so. They were trying to get a contaminated vaccine out there so that they could cause a pandemic for which they could sell their own vaccines back to them.
Well, you know, yeah. Just yesterday, a story broke in Whiteout Press that the CDC had hastily taken off its website an apologia for creating a polio vaccine that was contaminated with cancer. So it went up on the CDC website and then suddenly disappeared. So, gee, polio vaccine contaminated with cancer. So, wow. I mean, that's...
Most people don't even know that cancer is a virus. And that the very reason why almost everybody's getting cancer nowadays is because all the vaccines are contaminated with cancer viruses. And this one actually managed to report that it did have a cancer virus in one of its vaccines and then pulls it down, of course.
Yeah, well, the CDC has not been exactly forthcoming. For example, I was just talking about these BSLs. They're BSL-3s and 4s are the ones that I've been focusing on most because those are where they have the most problematic sorts of testing going on. And the CDC has consistently put out false and misleading information as to even the numbers of BSL-3s and 4s in the country. It was about a year ago where I was interfacing with the CDC about this. And they're saying, oh, well, you know, we don't have any more labs than we had before September 11th. I mean, we've got 250 BSL-3s, and actually there's a Department of Energy document that lists over 1,300 BSL-3s, not 250, like the CDC says, over 1,300. Somebody can't add over there, Vinny. And then you look at the BSL-4s, which are the really high containment labs, and you've got similar sorts of nonsense spewing from the CDC about this. You can find these labs. You can do your own research and find them. And then when you confront the CDC, they go, oh, you mean you found a lab? And, well, there might be a lab there. Got to go now. You know, I mean, it's like complete nonsense.
Janet, I would say that it's not that they can't add. It's that they're very good at subtraction.
Very good. Very, very good. So we have, you know, CDC lies. We have a proliferation of labs. We have research where nobody's minding the story. And this was very well exposed by the now defunct Sunshine Project, which was really dedicated to providing some level of sunlight into what was going on with these bioweapons labs biodefense labs. How silly of me. How could I call them bioweapons labs?
And it must have been a Freudian slip.
Maybe it was, something like that. So the Sunshine Project, you know, has really done a very good job in, looking at certain parameters. You know, what sorts of oversight mechanisms are there? Oh, well, you know, these labs are supposed to make these certain kinds of reports. And then the Sunshine Project goes in and looks and says, gee, they're not making the reports. And then the Sunshine Project went in and found out that, you know, that let's say a certain project was supposed to be researching, you know, any of these things, Marburg. and they find out that they're doing completely unauthorized research, you know, that has nothing to do with the stated sort of a project that's supposed to be going on. So at one point, the Sunshine Project, unfortunately, stopped doing this wonderful job in terms of providing some real grit in terms of our understanding of what's happening. I really wish that they were back in business. I wonder why they're not. But so, you know, we have a big question mark going on as to the activities going on in these labs. Now, there's another indicator which is even, I think, more disturbing than, you know, than what we were just discussing, and this is the change in our biological weapons legislation following the attacks of September 11th. So, as you know, Vinny, the U.S. Congress rushed to pass the USA Patriot Act, fought this huge, monstrous piece of legislation, which has really altered our entire constitutional framework. I mean, now we have these. Yeah, go ahead.
I believe I actually spoke to somebody who used to work for the Nixon administration, I think, that saw the Patriot Act on Nixon's desk. Like, it's been in the works for a long time, and they're just waiting for the right crisis. You just be like,
you know, I hope that we can maybe nuke our own citizens, or maybe somebody will be stupid enough to attack us or something like that. And that way we can pass this legislation that we've been sitting on for like 30, 40 years, you know?
Oh, well, I am not a crook. I am not a crook.
I love that. I love that. You know, it's people call us a conspiracy theorist in order to discredit us. And it was actually Richard Milhouse Nixon who called Woodward and Bernstein conspiracy theorists.
They're just conspiracy theorists. I am not a crook.
And then later he was exposed as being part of a conspiracy and a crook.
Well, you know, this is American history. This is the history of America, really, just really playing itself out. Right. So this piece of legislation, the USA Patriot Act, has had ramifications on many, many different levels in terms of you know, our spying on U.S. citizens, in terms of basically removing many of our options to petition for redress against government intrusion. And they snuck something into the USA Patriot Act about biological weapons. It's called the Expansion of the Biological Weapons Statute. It's Section 817. Tattoo that on your forehead. Section 817 of the U.S. Patriot Act.
Did you know, in the military, if you get a Section 8, it means you're insane.
Ah, well, this is, well, Section 8 insurance. Okay, well, we have an 817, which basically I think means your dad. So let me just say what it says in this 817. It goes into, you know, they amended a little bit of this and that and so forth. And then it says, the prohibitions contained in this section shall not apply to any duly authorized United States governmental activity. So what this means is that all of this top-heavy, you can't do this with bioweapons, you can't have them, you can't transport them, you can't store them, but we can, the U.S. government can.
Yeah, because of course only authority can be trusted, right?
Yeah, we're from the government and we're here to help. Trust me, right? Right. So the question would be, why was it necessary for the U.S. to give itself immunity from violating its own legislation about biological weapons? And not only did we give ourselves immunity, we failed, forgot, neglected to report this to the International Treaty Organization of which we're a signatory.
And we I find it, don't you find it ironic? The U.S. government writes into legislation that they're immune to bioweapons. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com with Janet Phelan, janetphelan.com.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca-Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I can just imagine the postmen, you know, driving around in their big post trucks, USPS or whatever the PS3, whatever the hell the US Postal Service is branded with now. And just, you know, playing some Johnny Cash, you know, I've been everywhere, man. Yeah. Thinking about delivering those anthrax letters. You know, a little bit of theme music. It would never hurt nobody. I mean, delivering anthrax over there, man. And it's a... And we're going to put it into your mountain there, man. All right. Janet Phelan is my very special guest. Where were we?
We were talking about the Biological Weapons Convention, which is another aspect. It's another perspective through which we can look at the U.S.'s iniquity in terms of what it says versus what it does. Biological Weapons Convention, which is an international treaty, came into existence in, well, entered into force in 1975. The U.S. signed the treaty in 1972, right around Richard Nixon, wasn't it? Actually, Richard Nixon, whom you so well characterized earlier in the show, had made a very bold move in the early 70s by unilaterally taking down, stopping, banning our offensive biological weapons program. He said, no more. Okay, we're not going to do this. I am not a crook. Trust me, right? So at that point, shortly thereafter, the Biological Weapons Convention came into effect as an international treaty, and everything was just real hunky-dory from that point on, right? I mean, we're not going to be creating biological weapons. We're not going to be using them, transporting them, stockpiling them, except the Biological Weapons Convention itself is curiously a paper tiger. It is, I believe, the only arms treaty that has no implementation protocol, no way to verify if the signers under the treaty are actually in accordance with the treaty mandate. So it's just a bunch of hot air, okay? Now, some of the nations didn't like that, so they got together, and they, after several years of committee meetings, they put together a verification and implementation protocol, and they presented this to the BWC at large in 2001, about 6 months before September 11th and the anthrax attacks. And this... this effort, which could have put some teeth into the BWC, was completely boycotted by, you want to guess, Vinny? Who was it who said, we're not going to do this?
Rumsfeld or
we can't have any of that. Now, I have a quote here. It was John Bolton was the... Under Secretary of State for Arms Control and International Security.
No relation to Michael Bolton?
Oh, I wish.
I'm sure he's just as terrible a singer.
Well, we might have been safer if he was singing instead of, parading around the world, making the world a dangerous place for all of us.
For democracy.
Yeah, exactly. Making the world safe for democracy. Making the world safe for the types such as John Bolton himself. So, because this national security thing, I mean, it's really about protecting, the elite. I mean, it's not about protecting the nation, unless you want to define the nation as the government itself, not the people.
Janet, my rule of thumb is, if the government says something, assume that it's the direct opposite to its stated intention. 90% of the time, actually more like 99.5% of the time, it'll be precisely what the opposite is.
So I have some little quotes here from John Bolton's speech where he, refused to have anything to do with this tainted verification protocol. I'd like to read it if I could. It's such a good example of newspeak, Orwellian newspeak. So John Bolton said, "Will we be courageous, unflinching, and timely in our actions to develop effective tools to deal with the threat as it exists today, or will we merely defer to slow-moving multilateral mechanisms that are oblivious to what is happening in the real world?" And then he says, "The United States will simply not enter into agreements that allow rogue states or others to develop and deploy biological weapons. We will continue to reject flawed texts like the BWC draft protocol, recommended to us simply because they are the product of lengthy negotiations or arbitrary deadlines. If such texts are not in the best interests of the United States and many other countries represented here today." So you take your verification protocol and put it where the sun don't shine. And as a result of this, we have no verification protocol.
Right. So instead of having oversight, it ensures that everything just gets overlooked.
Well, they did some very interesting things because they had to kind of like, patch up a little bit the, their blatant rejection of this. So now, instead of a real verification protocol, we have something euphemistically called confidence-building measures.
Which is brainwashing people into believing our BS measures.
Exactly. So the countries are supposed to, fill out these CBM forms, the confidence-building measure forms, and submit them to the United Nations for the other countries. The disregard with which these CBMs are held is evidenced by the fact that really very few countries are even bothering to do it. So the confidence building is the United States says, well, this is what we're doing, and if you don't like it, like, too bad, because we're just, we're telling you. And, of course, we're honest and truthful. We are not crooks, and trust us. Now, it got interesting, though, because after this this Section 817 of the U.S. Patriot Act was passed by the U.S. Congress, according to a politically binding agreement, the United States was mandated to report this change in legislation to the BWC, and it didn't. We did not report that we had decided that the U.S. government would have immunity from violating its own legislation, which the biological weapons statute is very close in its wording to this BWC agreement. So basically what the U.S. was doing was giving the bird to the BWC. But they forgot to tell the BWC, hey, we're going to do this whether you like it or not. So I was in Geneva in December of 2011. I went to Geneva for the Biological Weapons Convention. And I actually presented at the Biological Weapons Convention. And my presentation, which is actually on the UN BWC website, you can find it there if you look really hard, was focused on the many different parameters, the many different perspectives. You can look at the U.S.'s behavior and come to the conclusion that they're violating the treaty. And while I was there in Geneva, I started looking at this CBM stuff, and I thought, oh, my gosh, we never informed the treaty organization that we changed our laws. Now, the United States, at this BWC meeting in 2011 in Geneva, Switzerland, held several side events. It was mostly like during lunch, because the treaty, the international delegates were in this huge rotunda for hours and hours every day, talking about all these different issues. But there was opportunities during like lunch and so forth for countries or groups to hold little side events. So the U.S. hosted three side events during the BWC itself, which ran almost 3 weeks. The meeting, the big BWC meeting.
Is this what? in keeping with my rule of thumb, the side events were actually the real events, and the real event was actually the side event.
Well, you know, they were meant to sort of, you know, augment and give different perspectives and so forth. And some of them were very interesting, and some of them were, you know, pure propaganda. So I'm sitting at this little side event that the U.S. is hosting, and they have a panel up there, and they have a gentleman from the Department of Homeland Security named Dr. Daniel Gerstein. And he's doing a little presentation on our great bioweapons, our biosafety legislation, right? And he gets up there.
Do you have a German accent by chance?
You know,
and is it related to Joseph Goebbels?
Good question. I wish I had that question, because I wish I had, because I did ask some questions and apparently got people all upset, because the U.S. team approached me shortly thereafter and said, we've got a problem with the kinds of questions you're asking. But nevertheless, Gerstein puts up on the screen a PowerPoint demonstration showing our great biological weapons statute. Except he put up the old statute. He, quote-unquote, forgot, neglected to put up the revised edition of the expansion of the biological weapons statute, which was passed under the U.S. Patriot Act, and basically amended the biological weapons statute to give the U.S. government immunity. He forgot. So I reminded him. I put up my hand, and he foolishly called on me, and I said, don't you think you could, give us the updated version, Dr. Gerstein? And I went ahead and read it to him, you know, this specific caveat where it says these prohibitions shall not apply. And Gerstein, you know, he got a little nervous, and I had another question, of course, which he, at that point, they didn't want me to ask any more questions. So shortly thereafter, I was approached in the lobby by the U.S. team saying, you know, we'd like to talk to you about your question.
Janet, I'm sorry. We've got to go to break. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go frickin' nuts. You know, a lot of people actually get offended when they hear the tagline, the lighter side of genocide. I can assure you, there are a hell of a lot more offensive things than making fun of people being exterminated by the government. For example, the government exterminating people. That's more offensive! My very special guest is Janet Phelan from janetphelan.com. Welcome back. And sorry, we'll cut you off from this, like, epic rant that you're going through. Don't you just love it when you've got these little scumbag pieces of trash cockroaches cornered and got the light shining on them and they're all nervous and stuff and trying to shut you up and you're like, yeah, yeah, you better be afraid. Run, you cockroach!
Well, I'll tell you, Vinny, it would have been a lot more productive if the other media that was there in that room actually reported on what happened there.
Why they call them media, Janet? Is because it's all about me, media. That's all they care about.
Well, see, but that's the human. That's the human affliction, Vinny. That's what's going to sink us, actually, is our focus on ourselves, you know, as numero uno and numero only, and everybody else can take a friggin' leap. And that's the perspective that's going to sink us. I was at the BWC, and I asked these questions of Gerstein, who was really unable to answer them. So at the second U.S. side event, we had another little panel up there, and lo and behold, we had a gentleman named Selwyn Jameson, who was with the FBI Bioterrorism Squad. And I thought, well, I didn't get the answers, any answers from Gerstein, so I'll ask the same questions of Jameson. And, you know, I wanted to know, well, you know, doesn't the language in this Section 817, doesn't that constitute a violation of the Biological Weapons Convention? And Jameson's response was classic. He said, you must be mistaken. The U.S. does not violate treaties. Now, at that point, I was ready for my follow-up, you know, which had to do with waterboarding and torture. I thought that would be a good place to start. But at that point, I apparently wasn't going to be able to ask any more questions. My mic went off, and, you know, I was just, so I was just sort of funneled into no man's land there. So,
you know, I would have done in that position. If he says, the U.S. doesn't violate treaties, I would have just burst it out laughing, like, ah! Oh, you're serious? Oh, okay.
Well, listen, Vinny, I'm thinking very seriously. This BWC, this big, important organization, has another meeting coming up in December, and I am seriously thinking about going. I had positioned myself at the last meeting where I would be able to present because I registered as an NGO, but this time, I'd like to make sure there's some media in the room who's actually going to cover what's really going on. So, anyway, if you want to come to Geneva this December, bring your video camera and let's make some waves, huh?
Janet, I can give you advice as an independent media person who's been operating for 6 years and has a huge following and more videos and more coverage than anybody else in this country. Do it yourself. You cannot rely on anybody else. Anybody else. You cannot trust them. Not because they're incompetent, not because they're bought off, not because they're just lazy, but because you have the passion and they don't. You actually will film and will get it out there. All you need is a little handy cam. That's how I started, and look where I am today.
Well, you know? I will certainly take that advice very seriously. Thank you, Vinny.
Just a little tripod, and that's fine. I mean, if you want to get some decent equipment, I can recommend some different products and stuff on eBay that you can get if it's at all possible. You know, we've got these little Bluetooth wireless microphones that have a 50-meter range on them, kind of thing, about 150 feet away, and it still gives a crystal clear Bluetooth sound. You can plug it into your any old thing. I mean, yeah, do it yourself, wow, man.
Well, yeah, but I'll tell you, if we could actually get some real media in there, you know, we could actually get some news reports out about what is actually happening on that convention.
Maybe you're confused as to what real media really is.
Well, that's why I asked you, Vinny. Okay, so it was actually quite a circus there in Geneva a couple years ago. Hillary Clinton showed up for the first time ever to basically tell us what a wonderful job the U.S. is doing fighting bioterrorism. She actually presented the day after I made my speech, and she was, I guess, in a sense, trying to refute the points I've made. But my concerns about the United States and bioweapons go quite a bit deeper than changes in legislation and a top-heavy financial impetus following September 11th to fund these bioweapons labs. My concerns actually go into delivery systems. And these concerns, I think, really focus on three domestic delivery systems, which pretty much dovetail. One is my longstanding concern as to why, and this again began under Richard Nixon and has been carried out throughout the decades, why the U.S. started to quietly and secretly reconfigure the water systems all over the country, creating this double-line water system, which provides a perfect basically a venue for selective delivery of biological or chemical weapons. And if anybody's, you know, doesn't know about this project, you can Google water as a weapon, and also my article Homeward Bound, which both of which carry blueprints and other sorts of documentation as to this issue. Now, the reason that the water, the reconfiguration of the water system is so important because it does provide selectivity. And if there's going to be a domestic bioweapons attack, which would probably fall under the guise of a pandemic, right, it would have to be selective. For example, I know Alex Jones has been saying they're going to release airborne Ebola. Well, if they release airborne Ebola, they will kill themselves. So, you know, we have to look at a means to deliver some sort of pandemic-type agent that would not infect the perpetrators. So that is why selectivity is an issue. Also, vaccines can also basically be selective in terms of delivery system, because you can have two boxes of vaccines. I mean, it's simple, and you've got a list of people. You know, A list gets, you know, something, and B list gets something else. So you've got selectivity possibly there in vaccines.
So let's say, for example, you got a list of subversives and a list of willing slaves and dupes. Okay, and you've got two boxes of vaccines. One has a advanced bioweapon, and the other has saline solution.
See
what I'm getting at here?
It's entirely feasible. Right. There is a selective, a potential selective component. And the other issue, which dovetails so beautifully with a possible pandemic, is what we're calling imposter pharmaceuticals. And imposter pharmaceuticals are essentially fall into the same sort of descriptive category as box A and box B of the vaccines that we just discussed. And these imposter pharmaceuticals, and these exist. I mean, unfortunately, I can prove this. Imposter pharmaceuticals, let's say you go to the pharmacy and you want to get your antibiotics or your Viagra or your, you know, whatever you generally get from the pharmacy. You plunk down your prescription, and the pharmacist goes into the computer, because everything's computerized now, and if you're flagged, you could get the imposter. And the imposter will cause a heart attack or stroke. This is at play. These exist. So we have three potentials here for selective, basically, delivery of a biological or chemical weapon. And my concerns, I know there's a lot of people who are now stating, you know, martial law is coming and they're going to come get you and so forth. And my perspective...
They can just kill you all when you come and get your next heart medication pill.
That's right. That's right. And really, how did Andrew Breitbart die? You know, I mean, what really... Heart attack suddenly? I mean, you know, had he just gone to the pharmacy? I mean, really... How would we know?
So you had Suzanne Posel on the show the other day revealing that some of the new pacemaker designs that have wireless access, so the doctors can check on their status and things like that, you can actually activate them to deliver electric shocks to the heart when the heart's going fine and kill people with them.
Yes, and Barnaby Jack, the hacker, was just on the verge of exposing that at a big hackers meeting. And like, he's in his 30s, and he just like healed over dead. And he was working actually with medical supply companies to try to make these pacemakers safer, so that this wouldn't happen. But she's absolutely right; it can. And so, you know, we lost Barnaby to this, you know, trying to expose this as well. So my concern here is that people who are thinking that, you know, they're coming to get you, you know, get your guns and hunker down, because they're coming. my concern, and I'm not saying that isn't going to happen, but my concern here is that the United States has really invested itself heavily in its public persona. We are the beacon of freedom and democracy throughout the world. And if we start, like, sending, you know, police in to pick people up and shoot them in the streets or something, or take them off to FEMA camps, we're going to be, like, basically putting ourselves in the same obvious category as Adolf Hitler or Joseph Stalin.
Well if you recall, Adolf Hitler got away with taking everybody to these camps. And my sister actually spoke to Carl and Bridget, who were the parents of her of an exchange student friend of hers, and she asked them about this, and that nobody had any idea at the time. There was a Jewish community down the road from them, and one day they were all gone. They had no idea, and they were just told that they were taken to a places where they could be safe. And that's what will happen in America if they do implement those orders. I mean, it's like they've got backup plans to their backup plans to their backup plans. All right. So if the drugs don't get you, if the electromagnetic radiation doesn't get you, if the pandemics don't get you, then you got your FEMA camps and so on and so forth. If the fake heart attack guns don't get you, you know, so on and so forth. You know, they can get you any way they all please. And I don't think anybody is capable of even working out all of the possible ways that these fracks have figured out how to kill you. You know why? You know why people can't figure out all of the different ways and psychopathic methodologies in order to kill everybody? Because you're not freaking crazy psychopaths. You don't think like they do. And you haven't spent hundreds of billions of dollars coming up with umpteen thousands of different programs to murder your countrymen. That's why you can't figure it out.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true.
I mean, no wonder I've got to make jokes about this kind of stuff, but frack! You know, here's a joke to actually ease the tension on this one. You know how a lot of U.S. activists, particularly ones that are actually exposing bioweapons like yourself and attacks and releases to release pandemics and things like that, they all seem to be, or at least a lot of them, traveling to South America, you know, countries like Peru. And I was thinking, and you'd all come together, play an instrument, and form a Peruvian pandemic flute band.
Well, I think that's a wonderful idea. And as soon as Snowden shows up here in the South, I'll see if he wants to play the guitar or the drums, huh? Yeah. Wow. Really. Good idea. So,
in fact, I'm going to send that idea away to my man Roy, who does the great pictures at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, Peruvian pandemic flute band. That would be a great picture, isn't it? You know, put it up on the website. All right. Anyway, sorry, Janet. Sorry to interrupt.
No, no.
A little less.
Yeah, I think it's actually, you know, just to sort of do a quick plug for my upcoming book. I have a book coming out soon entitled Exile, and it goes into details about what actually happened that made Mexico look far more inviting to me than the United States. And it wasn't really a case of inviting. It was a case of, like, desperate flight. So
was it the drug cartels or the gun bans that make you not be able to defend yourself against the drug cartels that attracted you?
I'm sorry, what? What did you say?
Was it the drug cartels or the gun bans that disable you from being able to protect yourself against the drug cartels that attracted you to Mexico?
You know, I'm not sure I'm smart enough to even answer that. It's got my head spinning here.
Well, like,
it was out of control,
we were
rabid police officers in the United States. That's what it was.
Oh,
and
yeah. Roy raged up. But at least they're not employed by the drug cartels, paid off to shoot people that expose them.
What's the difference?
Yeah, I was just thinking about this the other day, you know. The United States has the NSA, and in Mexico they've got the NSA. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Janet Phelan from janetphelan.com is my guest. That's Phelan with a pff, with a PH. And which is incidentally, she's not that acidic. We'll be right back.
Bonkers.
Everything in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but I let sanity give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is Janet Phelan from janetphelan.com, as an O, what a feeling. And speaking of which, I was really concerned. I came back from a protest yesterday, and we started bullhorning in the middle of Pukekohe. It's a little town not too far south of Auckland, right, where I live. And within, I think, maybe 30 seconds of starting to bullhorn, the guy from the Sterling Sports Pukekohe, goodness knows what his name is, but he's a douche anyway, comes out and he says, "You don't have permission to do this. It's free speech, sir. This is a public road." And he says, "No, it's not." And I go, "Really? Is it a private road? Do you own it?" He's like, "Well, I'm going to call the cops on you." I go, "Call the cops, mate. Freaking scumbag." You know? What is it about people these days? They love their own frickin' enslavement. They hate people who speak the truth. They hate people disrupting their important little businesses just to do, you know, things like, I don't know, maybe expose the fact that you're not going to have any privacy anymore and you're going to be ruthlessly criminally enslaved by a bunch of frickin' scumbags in the parliament that you elected based upon lies and BS and selling out the entire country and everybody's particular freedoms that all of your ancestors frickin' died to secure for you. And you want to call the cops on me? You know what I found very interesting about the cop that came out to me? He was English, you know? And I was just, at the time, talking to him, you know, he's a relatively nice cop. He told us to turn the cameras off. I wasn't going to turn the freaking cameras off, you know? He tell my cameraman, Vince, turn that camera off. And I go, "Don't turn that camera off." You know why? Because every single time where you turn the camera off, they start acting like scum. All right, and they start violating your rights, and they use it as an excuse to start manhandling you. Every time. All right, that's why I no longer turn the cameras off when they ask me to. I just go, no, I'm just going to be perfectly respectful and amicable with you, sir, and if you've got nothing to hide, you got nothing to worry about. So let's just have a nice, friendly conversation, and that's precisely what we did. And that's something that I've noticed is the difference between New Zealand-born cops and English-born cops that are here in New Zealand now. Is that the English ones will actually talk to you and try to, you know, have a discussion. The New Zealand-born cops, on the other hand, they start being a dick right away. Shoving you, ordering you around, bossing you around, like they're little frickin' thug jackboot pieces of trash. You know, boss round protesters. Shove them for absolutely no reason. I remember I was at a TPPA protest, a Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is going to basically destroy this entire country's local economy and enslave us to the New World Order. And elderly protester was walking through the police lines. You know, everybody was told to get on the other side of the police line. So she was walking to the other side of the police line, and this big frack off cop, taller than me, okay, I'm 6 foot four, I'm pretty massive, and this guy was taller than me, shoves her viciously through the police line, and she comes right at me, and you know, if I actually hadn't been there for her to crash into, like big chubby and soft as I am, she would have fallen on the ground and maybe even smashed her teeth out, okay? I hate New Zealand cops. I prefer English cops that are in New Zealand, okay? For this very reason. They're thugs. They're real scum. I don't want to insult all New Zealand cops by this, and I don't want to tie you all with the brush, but you
if you're a good cop and you see this happening and you don't do anything to stop it, you're just as freaking culpable. So that's why I say all New Zealand cops are scum. Because you either treat us like trash or you let us be treated like trash, which means you are the trash. Don't you forget it. Don't you forget who the bad people are. It is not the criminals that you, the alleged criminals that you're bossing around and shoving at protests. It's you. Only you. Wake up. Wake the frack up. Start doing something good for your community instead of oppressing them. Acting like an animated uniform and an extension of the state, as David Icke would say. I just had to get that off my chest because it really Fs me off to no end. All right, Janet, I'm sorry. I just went off on a tangent rant.
Oh, you're known to do that, Vinny, and it's always a pleasure to be a witness to one of those tangent rants. You know, just to inject my perspective here as to why New Zealand cops would be so particularly nasty. I think there's like a giant sort of Stockholm syndrome going on with police. You know, they basically signed up to be the enforcement arm of a corrupt power broker, which is the state. Okay, and they know it. And I want to give a little story as to how I know they know it. I was here in Mexico, and there was a bunch of expats sort of sitting around, and some guy I'd never seen before, and I go, hey, you know, retired? He goes, yeah, I'm retired. He goes, retired from the police. I go, really? You retired from the police? When did you retire? He goes, oh, like 2002. I thought, I'm thinking this after 9/11. And I said, well, you know, how do you like it down here? He goes, great. He goes, you, what do you do? I go, I'm a reporter. And suddenly his whole aspect changed, and he's kind of, his eyes are darting around, and it lowers his voice. He goes, you're a reporter. He says, then you know what's going on. And I felt so sorry for him. I mean, he left. He exercised his conscience, and rather than become an enforcement arm of evil and abuse, he left the force. But he saw what was going on, and he knew. And he wanted to make sure. He says, you know what's going on then. And you know what's going on is they're violating people's rights. You know, they're falsely arresting people. They're setting people up. Just the other day, I got an email from a guardianship reform activist named Marty Pren, who's out in the Midwest. And, you know, they tried to set him up on fake drug charges. I mean, I experienced that too. It's one of the reasons, you know, behind my decision to leave my country. I don't use drugs. So, you know, I come home and there's, you know, drugs all over my house and I'm freaking out and the police show up. You know, it's a dangerous scenario. So, you know, so we have police knowingly basically trying to criminalize innocent people, assaulting innocent people. And so, you know, at some point, whatever sort of little tiny mote of a conscience they still have left that hasn't been sort of, you know, processed out of them through their police training, you know, kind of kicks in, and so they become even more abusive because they're basically, they signed on to it. This is their job. This is what they do, and it makes them very angry, and so they take it out on us. Stockholm syndrome. That's what I think.
Yeah. It's it's one of these things that I think people need to really get their head around. If somebody has a uniform, that person loses their mind eventually. And my good friend Grace Hayden, she's a 15-year prosecuting sergeant for the New Zealand Police. Incredible woman. Really good at her job. And she said on this show in 2010 that the New Zealand Police are so corrupt, that you will either become corrupt like them or you will leave. And she left. You know, so there's a lesson to you, any police watching this. I know that the police do watch these videos. In fact, I've called up the cop station and asked them what they thought of them, and they go, hang up the phone on me. Run, you cockroach. And I just, I just want to encourage them to leave and turn whistleblower. All right, basically, you know that you've been exposed to training protocols that are against your good conscience, if you got one. Come out. Go public. Start up a YouTube channel. I don't care. Contact me. Slip me some information. I will not reveal who you are or what your name is or anything like that. I don't do that kind of thing. I don't reveal my sources like any good chef. And I'll get the information out for you about what the real training protocols are, about how corrupt the police as an institution truly is in this country and in any other. Okay? I don't want to live in a country where the people who are supposed to keep you safe are indeed the ones who make you most afraid of all. I'm actually really afraid of police, Janet. I'm really afraid of judges too. And I'm really afraid of criminal gangs, which incidentally the police are. You know, and it's for the same reason that I fear judges, police, and gangs, is because they're deceptive. You can't trust anything that they say. And they have no respect for the rule of law. And in the case of just the police and the gangs, they're violent. You know, they have no qualms about using violence against you. I don't like my personal space being violated. I haven't laid a hand on anybody since I was 15 years old when I decided that I didn't want to be a violent person anymore. You know, I was really, really violent up until that age, all the time. And now I can't deal with it at all. You know, that sense of enraged, inflamed sensation you get when somebody messes with you and you know that there's nothing you can do back to them, you know? If a cop smacks you in the face for no absolute reason and you smack him back, instead of what should happen, which is he gets haymakered and gets knocked out and the rest of the other cops laugh at him for being such a douchebag for smacking you in the first place for no reason, all of them will jump on you like a gang, kick your teeth out, gouge an eye out or something like that, and just be absolutely vicious, taser you, mace you, that kind of thing. That's how you know that you're a slave, when you can't defend yourself against somebody who's acting unlawfully. The day that I realize that I'm free will be the day that a cop assaults me and I knock him out and nothing happens to me. That will be the day that I realize that I'm free finally.
I do want to say that it was very astute of you to include judges in that list, because judges actually are the law. You know, they are there actually to uphold and support the law, but they don't anymore. They are the law. So they are issuing absolutely corrupt, malicious, and illegal decisions. And once again, your ability to redress that has been terribly mitigated in the U.S. I have a lot of articles concerning this on my website. It is, you know, legal corruption is one of the issues that I really focus on. I want to say, before we don't have too much time left, I think, and I wanted to say a little bit more about biological weapons. That's okay. Is that okay? Can we shift gears?
Yes.
Yeah. So
I'm just going to exhale this kind of rage that I'm feeling and then just, okay, go for your life.
Okay. Well, we talked earlier about selectivity and delivery system, you know, box A and box B concerning both medications and vaccines, and also the very sort of diabolical thing that they've done with the water system. But there's also the issue, another issue having to do with selectivity is selectivity in agent, you know, selectivity in the type of bioweapon that they may be choosing to deliver. And pursuant to that, I started looking at the issue having to do with genetic weapons. And a genetic weapon, a weapon that is fashioned against either an individual DNA or a group's DNA, also basically meets the standard for selectivity. For example, if somebody wanted to really mess you up, Vinny, if they fashioned a bioweapon, if they, you know, they have to grab your DNA first, you know, you that's easy. You know, let's just take a little hair follicle, or you know, you're drinking at a party and you sip from a glass. I mean, it's got your DNA on it. Then saliva, you know, just grab the DNA, and then they can fashion a genetic specific weapon that would only target Vinny Eastwood. And at that point, you know, the method of delivery would be, you know, pretty easy. I mean, they need to put it in food, water, air. You know, those are the basic, you know, consumables, air, food, water, right? Now, this sounds like science fiction. However, there are many indicators now that this is at play. And I want to give a couple of examples here. Back in 2009, a book came out that was entitled In the President's Secret Service. And this book detailed that it was written by a Secret Service agent named Ronald Kessler. And it detailed how there's a whole Secret Service unit now that is pledged to protect Barack Obama's DNA. They follow him around. They burn sheets. They vacuum up his hair. They grab the glasses where he's been drinking and, you know, go destroy them, because there is grave concern about somebody unfriendly to the president grabbing his DNA. Now, that indicates that the concerns that, you know, DNA-specific weapons may be actually launched against the president are actually now current. Also, back in 2010.
Well, Janet, we're coming to break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Sure.
Yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love.
Welcome back.
It's because it's when everything is just right.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the sexiest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. Oh yeah, baby, give it to me. Inject me with your poison, pandemic flute band. My very special guest.
What a way to go, huh? Yep.
Yeah. Stick your thumb on that plunger, baby. This just got really out of hand. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. Janet Phelan is my guest, and you were really getting into something before we got interrupted by the break. Can please, for the love of Norwegian cheese, continue. We've only got like 10 minutes left.
Right. So I was talking about genetic weapons and how they can now fashion a weapon that can individually destroy Vinny Eastwood or Janet Phelan or anybody else, actually, based on your own DNA. And I was giving some examples as to you know, indicators that this is so. And I'd mentioned that the contingent of the Secret Service agents who are now pledged to protect Barack Obama's DNA, they scurry around like, they kind of remind me of the what were they, the Mormon Mafia who took care of Howard Hughes. You know, they kind of scurry around like, you know, burning bed sheets and grabbing little hair follicles, you know, just kind of like the personal attendance to Barack Obama's DNA to make sure that nobody else grabbed it. And the other issue.
I love the word scurry whenever we talk about any kind of henchman of officialdom. It's really apt.
Yeah, well, you know, with this particular contingent and effort, I mean, I can just see them. I'm like, you know, they got there's a hair there, and it's like, oh, there was a glass. Was that Michelle or Barack who drank from that? Well, we better grab it anyway. You know, it's like it's amazing. And the other issue that I wanted to, you know, to sort of pinpoint this, is a 2010 WikiLeaks cable release that has Hillary Clinton directing embassy officials in foreign countries, you know, U.S. embassy officials, to surreptitiously grab the DNA of foreign diplomats and heads of state. Now, what is this DNA obsession really about? But it goes further than protecting or harvesting officials' DNA, because we have an entire couple of programs now within the U.S. that are creating DNA databases of U.S. citizens. One of these was codified in 2007, a piece of legislation called, I think, the Newborn DNA Screening Act, which basically legitimizes what's been going on since the 80s in many states, which is taking samples of newborn and storing samples of newborn DNA. At this point in time, it's unclear how large the registry is, but my sources tell me that they're getting at least 4 million samples a year attached to the newborn's name. Okay? So your DNA is being stored by the government. And not only are they collecting newborn, but they're also collecting offenders or arrestees. So if you are arrested in the United States, according to a recent Supreme Court decision, it is not an invasion of privacy for the police to, you know, take a sample of your DNA. So the FBI cops to, at this point, a database of about 13 million offender DNA. We don't even know how many of the newborn DNA is being stored. So what is this DNA obsession all about? You know, why are they so focused on this now? And there has been at least one effort, and this was back in South Africa in the 1970s and 80s, where Project Coast, which was the biochemical warfare unit of the apartheid South African government, was dedicated to creating a blacks-only bioweapon that would target people, you know, with dark skin, who were, of course, the pariahs of the South African state.
So this AIDS. It's called AIDS. You're 50 times more likely to get infected with AIDS if you're black.
Well, this raises questions. I mean, how did this end up to be a blacks disease? But there's another aspect to this as well. Since the 70s and 80s, when Wouter Basson was dedicated to creating this blacks-only bioweapon, there has been soaring rates of hypertension and diabetes, which are considered silent killers, in people of color. And according to my sources, which include also a South African scientist who worked alongside Basson, what Basson was working on was finding something that would attach onto melanin. People with darker skin have more melanin. And lo and behold, since the time that Basson was working on this, we have seen skyrocketing rates, not only in black people, but the darker skinned people like Pacific Islanders, indigenous peoples like in Mexico. The rate of hypertension and diabetes here, where I'm living among the indigenous, is absolutely off the charts. In some communities, it's as high as 50% now. So my sources tell me that Basson was successful. My sources tell me that this was leaked into processed food. So if you look at indigenous cultures, which are still eating natural food sources, not processed food, you don't find those rates of diabetes and hypertension at all. I've studied this rather extensively. So it looks like, you know, AIDS is an issue, but so is now what appears to be food-related hypertension and diabetes among people with darker skin. So, you know, these are really scary times that we're living in. I mean, you can be individually targeted. You can be targeted because of a group that you happen to share a DNA sort of strand with. And all of this falls under the mantle of plausible deniability. Oh, you know, these people, they're just black people. They just get diabetes. And, oh, a pandemic. Gee, well, we killed all this. We killed all the poor people. Well, they just didn't have good health anyway. You know, I mean, it all falls under, well, you know, it keeps clean the persona and image of the government while enabling the government to do the most horrific sorts of things.
You know, it's you really can't underestimate the racism element. And you know what I find very interesting, Janet, is that people who come out and talk about race of any kind really get accused of being racist. But the government and the royal family don't get accused of being racist, even though they are clearly involved in promoting eugenics, which invariably winds up targeting the quote-unquote unclean races. Isn't that interesting?
Well, you know, they've got a very good PR effort. It's called the media. The media is basically acting as a public relations arm. That's where one of the problems is.
You know what the biggest killer of black people is in America?
What?
Planned Parenthood.
Oh, wow. Yes.
80 million black babies aborted.
There's a lot of, you probably know, there's a lot of evidence linking the genesis of Planned Parenthood to the Eugenics Society.
Well, in fact, it was actually called the Eugenics Society, but after World War II, eugenics kind of got a bad name, you know, because of the fact that they just exterminated people and talked about racial purity, racial hygiene, that kind of thing, which is quackery science. And so the American Eugenics Society, which I think Bill Gates' father was one of the board members, and now Bill Gates is one of their prime contributors. It doesn't change much, does it? Change their name to Planned Parenthood. Because Planned Parenthood sounds a heck of a lot better than eugenics, we're going to exterminate you all, doesn't it? But they still practice eugenics and exterminate you all.
Well, the United States sounds a lot better than the National Socialist Party of Hitler's Germany, too. You know, you just change the name and you just, you know, continue on with the same sorts of activities.
Yeah, I mean, I moved to South America, and people didn't like the name Adolf Hitler, so I changed my name to Franz. Franz Ferdinand. Yes, it was very nice. Everybody treated me like an equal, and they were kind of suspicious about my very strange mustache, but I shaved it off. And now nobody cares. I mean, come on. I mean, I'm just making that up, of course, for the sake of argument, but yeah, happens all the time, doesn't it? Like Blackwater. You know what Blackwater is called now?
Academia or something like that? Academia, right?
No, it's called Z.
They changed it again.
And it's owned by, drumroll please, Monsanto. And guess who's got the ability now under the New Zealand Food Bill legislation, or when it passes, of course, and it will. To send private mercenaries onto your home and property looking for illegally grown vegetables. Drum roll, please. Monsanto. It's not freaking difficult to work out as long as you've got the information. Isn't it? We've come to the end of the show, Janet. Do you have a quick wrap-up if you want, 30 seconds, or have we said enough?
Well, just, you know, very quickly, my website is janetphalen.com. Look for my upcoming book soon, Exile. And thank you, Vinny. It's been a real pleasure.
Likewise. And thank you very much for giving us some of your valuable time. And I'm very glad that we had those calls before the show started, so we got those technical issues sorted out, because otherwise it would have just been me ranting about how much I hate cops today, which I think, you know, there was a little section in there where I couldn't contain myself, but yeah, it's all good. Thank you, Janet. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. By the way, if you appreciate this show and the coverage that we give to people like Janet, who blow the whistle on very, very scary topics, please donate or subscribe for $5 a month at the Vinny Eastwood Show. We'll see you again sometime.